Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I spent all of last episode saying nothing but positive stuff.
I was going to say this at the top if you didn't bring it up. I am afraid of being at the backlash of your overcorrection
to try regression and, to the mean.
Yeah, to gain equilibrium in your own heart and mind that you're going to be absolutely unbearable in this episode.
The regression to the mean as in like I'm going to be
to
mean,
the mean
on this
yes,
one.
Yeah. To the mean indeed.
Yeah, no, that's that might happen. It actually might have been a self-correction because of having to talk to Harrison. And I was just like, you know what? I need some positivity. I need to. Today, though, a big topic, or I don't know if it's really a topic of conversation. It's not a topic of conversation in NBA Twitter at large because it's a positive talking point about the Lakers. So people aren't really talking about it as much. But the Lakers defense, Pete, you know the stat. It's been said a bunch of times now. But since Tyson Chandler has showed up, the Lakers have the second best defense in terms of defensive rating in the NBA over that time, and that stretch of 13 games that they have played at that type of ability and efficiency defensively has vaulted them up to seventh on the year. They're a top 10 defense. If I would have told you 23, 25-ish games in that the Lakers were going to have a top 10 defense, would you have said, did you just talk to Harrison?
Bro, what a fantastic thing to be wrong about, you know, like, and now before the season, a lot of our talk and rightfully so was like their backup five spot is not looking good if LeBron does not want to play that spot.
Present.
And then, you know, James Jones came in, Ryan McDonough's fired. James Jones takes over the Phoenix GM job, does a LeBron a solid. But even then, like if you told me the Lakers were going to have Tyson Chandler fall in their lap 10 games into the season, I would have been like, all right, that helps things out. Mm-hmm. But second, since he's come aboard and not a sample at this point, we've like a month worth of data and games.
Yeah,
like it's not, now he's not the only thing. There have been some other things that are pretty much everything that we hoped would be working out is working out. But like even with Chandler falling into their laps, I would have never guessed they had this type of ceiling, man. What, like I said, what a great thing to be wrong about. This really changes the calculus.
I guess the question begs asking, is Tyson Chandler the greatest free agent acquisition for the Lakers? And how long would you say?
Bro, so quick little rant. I was at the 12:30 game on Sunday, right? And I have a new appreciation, like being there, just how awful of an idea 12:30 games on Sundays are.
Yeah.
But Phoenix is so bad. Like they're so, not just that they're bad. That's not the point that I want to convey. They are several degrees lower intensity than any other team that's rolled through there. And I've seen the Lakers on their bad nights and all that. Their body language is awful. So I could totally see why a champion, a former defensive player of the year, a guy like Tyson Chandler is just like, man, why even bother when he's there? You know, and then comes here and then it's like, hey, real basketball again. This is fun, you know.
Yeah.
And you can see how hyped up, even when Wagner scored his first 2 points, it was him and JaVale, right?
Yeah.
The other bigs were up cheering for that. And so that's a big part of it for sure. Anyhow, I want to get that off my chest. Phoenix is an absolute disaster of a franchise.
No arguments here.
Yeah, no breaking news there either, right?
So today, though, the way today's show is going to go, and we started already kind of touching on it, but what has made the Lakers successful, or this successful, over the last 13 games? And then in the second segment, we're going to raise a couple concerns as to maybe why it might not be sustainable. And then at the end of it, in segment three, we're going to talk a little bit about where we think this goes. Are we crazy enough to say top two sustainable? Are we going to say how far, if they take a step back, how far might that step go? And if we need to go to this well, LeBron responded to Kobe and Magic's concerns and other people's concerns that have been voiced about his workload. So we have a ton to get to today. before we get to it, I want to, again, make sure you guys have 12-13, December 13, circled on your guys' calendar so that we can see all you guys at Tom's Urban. We'll get to more of that as the show goes along. But let's start with, we talked already about Tyson Chandler, and that was basically it, right? So I think it's twofold on Chandler's, what changed when he showed up. One thing, it allows JaVale to play in shorter bursts, which makes him more effective because of the way that he approaches defense. And then after JaVale sits down, there isn't the complete lack of a center fielder, basically, at the rim. So those two things are big. And then the other thing is Lonzo Ball has gotten healthier, and you spent some time looking at Kyle Kuzma's defense and how that's improved. So of those factors, and then, you know, there's other things. Brandon Ingram has become a pretty good perimeter defender as well. Maybe Luke Walton is doing some things coaching-wise. Of all of the factors that are here, what would you say, beyond Tyson Chandler just showing up, would you say is the top factor that has made the Lakers as successful as they've been?
I would give Luke Walton a lot of credit on this. Now, mm-hmm. His substitution patterns drive me crazy. Some offensive principles really bother me. I think he's an underrated defensive coach. And I think it's easy to, like, it's funny when we talk about offense, we break it down. It's ball handling and passing and shooting and things like that, right? And then when we talk about defense, it's like he's good at defense as though that's just one thing, right? Like, those have sub elements to them as well.
Yeah.
And he's done a good job of identifying what guys are good at and putting them in the position to do that while mitigating against, those places where they're not as good. Mm-hmm. So Kuzma is now on the perimeter more. He has a bit of a talent for chasing guys around screens. I've always pounded the table that he's a wing defender, and we're seeing a lot of the reasons why I've felt that way, right?
Right.
Now, the guy who was doing that before was Brandon Ingram, who had been doing some very good things defensively, but was too often put in a position to chase guys coming off of off-ball screens, which is a weakness for Brandon, in part because technique, but mostly because he's a guy with enormous legs and a high center of gravity, and he's skinny. Yeah. So any off-ball screen is really going to knock him off of his path, right? So Brandon's doing that less and is more at the point of attack. Lonzo is kind of their rover, like, whatever you need me to do, if you need me on the best player, if you need me on the weak side, Lonzo's capable of filling what either role there. And then Josh Hart has gotten a lot of backup 4 minutes. Now Beasley's playing that backup 4 spot, but Josh is in those perimeter defender situations less. He can chase guys off of screens, and he's been put in the position to do that. So I really like how Luke has put everybody in that position, along with how he utilizes the bigs, and that basically everything's a drop coverage now, and they're not asking JaVale to show high. He's leading the league in block shots as a result of that. Basically everything fits the skill set of what guys do, and I give Walton a lot of credit for that.
The whole time you were talking, I was thinking, like, God, if he could only identify these skills offensively, too.
And maybe we're having a different conversation in February than we are now. Now, that's something in the first 2 years that Walton's been here. His offense has gotten better as the season's gone on, as he's focused on defense early on. Mm-hmm. I would like to have both. I don't know how doable that is without continuity in terms of the roster, all of that stuff. And there are criticisms to be had, and I have them as well as you. But we've seen the fruit over the last month of the training camp philosophy of we're just going to work on defense. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing, like, the payoff for that beyond what I had hoped for this team.
And I before we head to break, and we'll pick up on some of this stuff here in a second, I also think that it's worth pointing out, it might be identification on his part as well, as, okay, these guys, we're probably going to be best getting out and running. So what can I focus on that best enables us to get out and run? And if that's the case, then it would be defense, right? That's just the one then two type of correlation.
Yeah, it all ties together.
All right, we're going to take a quick second, and when we come back, we'll carry over some of this because there's some other factors here. I think one factor that I for some reason, well, I know the reason, but hasn't been brought up nearly enough has been Lonzo Ball's health, and I think the more healthy he's gotten, him being a force on defense makes this Lakers team capable. Today's show is brought to you by Mazuma. Mazuma USA is the company you need to talk to if you have a small business and you want to get your finances in order. As we head into the holidays and as we head into tax season, they have licensed CPAs, bookkeepers, and accountants here in the U.S. A single phone call, text, chat line, email. They have all the various ways that you would be looking to communicate them in a quick manner, and they're always there to respond as quickly as you might need them. I've worked with them now for about 6 months. David came to me yesterday asking if I could cut a national hit for them, and I said no problem whatsoever. I love talking about them. I love referring to you to them. So give them a call at 213-947-6926 for a free consultation. Again, that's 213-947-6926. They have packages starting at only $75 a month, and they'll figure out what works best for you. That's Mazuma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping. So breaking news, but again, we tend to lack context when diagnosing and analyzing Lonzo Ball's game. Lonzo Ball, just for as a reminder, as a refresher here, missed a good chunk of the offseason, missed all of training camp, missed most of preseason, and then came back on a minutes restriction. And lo and behold, him struggling a little bit defensively and kind of floating around a little bit has kind of fallen a little bit by the wayside as maybe he's gotten healthier. Now, some of it might be technique. Some of it might be focus. I frankly think to a certain extent he might actually be aided by Rajon Rondo not being there in terms of not looking over his back. The way that Lonzo plays defense, he's going to make mistakes because he plays that rover role. And if he isn't comfortable making those mistakes, if he thinks that if I make this mistake here, I might get pulled to the bench, well, then that makes him a little less likely to put himself out there and try those things. So I think all of this has kind of come together, and I don't think it's a coincidence. Now, we talked about Tyson Chandler, but I don't think it's a coincidence that as Lonzo has gotten more comfortable in playing defense the way that he knows to play defense and comfortable physically to be able to do so, that the Lakers as a whole defensively have gotten a lot better.
Yeah, you kind of have your go-to guy on the perimeter. I touched on it a little bit in the first segment, but that guy where whatever we need from you, you're going to be able to do that. That kind of puts, it's almost like how on offense, if you've got a guy who everything can revolve around, like a LeBron, right? Mm-hmm. Guys can play to their strengths a little bit more. You're not asking them to go outside of their capability. Very similar to on the defensive end of what Lonzo brings as a perimeter defender. It means you don't have to have Brandon chasing guys around screens, and you don't have to have, you know, LeBron doing as much as a defender as you would ask him of him in the playoffs. And so it's kind of this like go-to guy where the Lakers all of a sudden, especially with Lonzo's getting healthier and all of that, like you said, and more engagement, like, you know, he's a fantastic defensive guard. He's, like I said, he's the best one I've seen roll through Staples Center this year. I haven't seen Beverly yet. I haven't seen Drew Holiday. There are other guys mm-hmm. that are great in the league, but he's been upper echelon type of guy. Then you got KCP, who's a very good defender. Josh Hart has been improving and been put in better situations. So now all of a sudden it's like, oh crap, they can defend the point of attack yeah. and all that. But I think a lot of that stems from your point of like Lonzo emerging, and then other pieces get to kind of fall into place guarding lesser players or more specialized players outside yeah. of that.
I completely agree. And you mentioned KCP. This is just how basketball goes. Sometimes you make a few shots, you feel more comfortable, or you find yourself more willing to stick your neck out there and be a better defender. It's just your energy level goes up as you make more shots. So I think KCP hitting shots on one end has helped him become a better defender on the other.
You know, it's been interesting along those same lines. Lonzo's shot like crap lately, yeah. like over the last month or so, especially from 3-point range. He just has not had the touch. And thankfully, he's still been able to be engaged and still making an impact on these games. We'd be having a very different conversation right now if he was still floating or occasionally playing defense the way he was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah. I always kind of sort of thought that that it was fool's gold the way he was shooting at the beginning of the year. I mean, his hesitation on open shots to me didn't speak well to where his shot was heading. It was kind of like he would shoot the ball and it would go in and he'd be like, oh. He was as surprised as you and I might have been. But it's good to see, though, as you mentioned, that he hasn't let that affect. And if anything, he's tried to pick up elsewhere on the court to make up for his lack of shooting. So that's been good to see as well. Let's really quickly here talk about some of the concerns that of why this might not be sustainable and. Like, let's both be clear. You and I, we both probably agree that the Lakers aren't going to finish the season as a top two defense.
Right. Yes.
So let's just be, there's going to be a step back. We're just trying to figure out how far that might go and where that might come from. You spent some time talking about Kyle or watching Kyle Kuzma play defense. Do you think it's sustainable what he's been doing here?
Yeah, that's the first place I go to for the where are we going to see, like, yeah, the, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, six games isn't enough, especially relative to what we've seen over the course of the rest of his NBA career. Now, I do think that he is going to be better going forward because he's put in the position to do what he's better at. And I take them at their word that he's been a guy who works very hard and is very much focused on getting better at this. A lot of times we want our Christmas present and we want it now, you know, mm-hmm. And it does take time for a guy to get gradually better. But that being said, it's been like this 180, like it's been so weird. I should have my video on this coming out same day this pod will. And it's just a bizarre, like, he's been legitimately good. Now, if I were a betting man, would I put money down on him being legitimately good on defense for the next, you know, 60 games? I do not. And that's why I think, I honestly can't believe I'm saying this, Anthony, but I think they've got top 8 to 10 potential. It's just been long enough now where they've been really good. No, they haven't played a great schedule, but they played some good teams in there and done well on defense against them. So and if this is a top 8 to 10 team, man, I don't know. It just, that's a different squad than I expected to be watching this year.
It's what makes me a little bit more comfortable predicting that they might finish in the top 10 is their situational defense, where they go up against some of these better teams in late game situations and that team needs a bucket, and I don't feel like the Lakers are completely screwed.
Yes. It's funny you say that because, like, they're, We talk about these numbers so much, and I'm trying to talk about them less, even though I value them, because there's so much context that gets lost. And mm-hmm. like, when the Lakers give up 130 points these days, it's games like Denver or Toronto or the first Orlando game where they're just like, we're not, like, yeah. When they try to play defense, they're really good, yeah. And they're consistently really good even against good teams. When they barely care, it is obvious from very early on. And even the Suns had, like, what, 25 points in the first 7 minutes or something, yeah, like that. Like they are bad, 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 bad when they don't care. But the fact that they can be good when they lock in, they are going to get the stop way more often than not. That's really encouraging to me.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, we're going to come back and figure out, as we both agree, that a step back is going to happen. But where might that lead us? When might we start to see that step back pop up? It's also worth mentioning that they're going to get back Rajon Rondo, who has his problems defensively or whatever. But I do think if there's anybody I trust to be able to step in and recognize what the Lakers need, I think it's him. So we'll talk about that addition here in a second. So if I was to say over under, the Lakers finish the season at the 8 spot, so either 7 or lower, or I guess 7 or higher, or 9 or lower, where would you put your money on?
Are we going defensive rating?
Yeah, defensive rating.
I'll go they'll finish slightly worse than that. So, and you know, like I said, in the 8 to 10 range. Mm-hmm. So you're right at the point where, yep, where I'm
at. I said it there on purpose.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll say they finish 9th or 10th. That's just a guess. They're going to, you know, things are going to get a little bit tougher. The grind of the season will wear on. The Lakers have fortunately been relatively healthy. Obviously had Rondo's injury, but you know, there will be guys that get hurt at some point. And mm-hmm. So I'm going to say 9th or so.
Yeah, I would agree there. They finished at 13 last year. I think they're capable of being slightly better this year than they were last year. So
I can't believe that, man. I like, really, this was my biggest concern about this team. And to see them not just being okay at it, but good, like, I'm just blown away, dude.
Yeah, defense to me, yeah, I would have said just put them at league average and see if they can make up the difference on offense. I was honestly more concerned about the shooting aspect of things than defense, and we'll see how that turns out. But I don't think it's possible to overstate how just having a roster that makes sense. Like, it's just guys are starting to fall into place, and this is how 82 game seasons go, right? We're even just recently, we saw Luke Walton give Lance Stephenson's meaningful minutes to Michael Beasley. And yeah. I think that starts to make the rotation make a little bit more sense here. Right. And you know, we'll see. If I still am reluctant, highly reluctant, extremely reluctant to hope for anything from Mo or Svi this season. But you know, you never know. I just think when it comes to trying to figure out where the Lakers finish up here or wrap up defensively by the end of the season, they seem to make sense. I can see why they're successful, and I don't feel uncomfortable about the way that they've succeeded here.
Yeah, it doesn't feel fluky.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where as I'm watching, I'll put it this way. We talked earlier about Lonzo Ball's shooting at the beginning of the year. And when he shoots it and it goes in, it's like, oh, it's like a pleasant surprise. Hey, wow, look at that. When on bad teams, when somebody makes a proper rotation defensively, it's that same kind of thing. It's like, oh, he stumbled drunk into the spot he was supposed to be. Look at that. But with the Lakers, where while if I'm watching them closely defensively, I'm actually frustrated when somebody doesn't make a rotation, which tells me that I'm comfortable at this point having expectations of what they're able to do defensively. And 23 games in, I don't know if I could have asked for anything more than that.
Yeah, they're trying. Like, when they're trying, they're really good.
Yeah.
And they are like, even the young guys get how it's supposed to work. I think this is the primary difference. Like, there are going to be games in an 82 game season, more than us as fans like, but that's how it goes, mm-hmm. where you're going to have nights where the guys just don't show up. But when they do, if the young guys especially don't know how it's supposed to work, it doesn't matter that much. You're better, but you can't be good if the young guys don't understand how rotations work. And that's been a real, especially with Kuzma's emergence, knock on wood, it's longer than this short stretch. But Lonzo is an elite defender. Brandon is close to that, in my opinion, mm-hmm. at this point, especially when you put him in the position where he's supposed to be. Josh has really solid strengths, even if he has some weaknesses. If Kuz is part of that, man, that's an unusually strong young core on the defensive end. Yeah. We always talk about young cores through the lens of, can you carry the offense? Can you be the number one guy, the number two guy, all that? The Lakers have done a nice job of assembling defensive talent amongst young guys, which is it's tough to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I had a point that I was going to make, and I completely forgot it, and I'm a little bummed that I did, because I thought it was a good one. But I guess the last thing I'll wrap up on this is, we talked about Rajon Rondo coming back. He isn't going to play in, by the time you guys are listening to this, tonight's game. But he sounds like he's close. There's no way that he comes back and messes this up is kind of my stance on it. Would you agree with that, or do you think there's some concern there?
I think he's going to be more good than bad. we talk about defensive rating, and again, you know how I'm talking about, like, yeah, we lack so much context, though. One of the things that factors into the Lakers' defensive rating is they've been turning the ball over so damn much. Mm-hmm. That, and part of that, a big part of that, is because you don't have a point guard on the second unit. You've got Brandon trying to do that, right? But there's been a lot of turnover issues with both the first unit and the bench and the mixed lineups as well. And Rondo's a guy who's always been good on that aspect, where he's really good assist to turnover ratio. Your turnovers are going to go down. And part of what factors into that, like, it's hard to have a number two defensive rating when you're turning the ball over as much as the Lakers do. It's actually even more remarkable than just number two, because there's so many plays where you, like, throw the ball away and now it's a 3-on-1 fast break and you give up a layup. Now that gets charged to your defensive rating, right? But that's an offensive mistake that you're paying for on the other end. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see the, like, 5-on-5 type of data where, like, if you don't turn the ball over, you'd see an even better defensive rating than they have now because of how many turnovers they've had. So I think Rondo's going to kind of tighten up that ship. I wonder if we see Brandon with the second unit anymore, or if he goes with the Rondo, KCP, Hart, Beasley, JaVale, or Chandler during that stretch.
I hope he staggers. Luke, if you're not listening, but please stagger. Please. Like, I'm not asking for much. Just come on. All right. Let's really quickly here spend a little bit of time. I think it's an interesting topic here because of the level of nuance required to discuss all of this. So as I'm sure everybody has noticed or has seen or read at this point, Kobe kind of sort of reiterated one of Magic Johnson's concerns about the Lakers relying a little too heavily on LeBron. Kobe looked at it more from a standpoint of, I think, the physical wear and tear, which makes sense given Kobe's own medical history in that regard. You and I were talking before we started recording this. It's almost eerie, right, that LeBron is in year 16. Kobe hurt his Achilles somewhere in year 15 or 16, and did so as a result of a crazy responsibility of everything, both minutes wise and in terms of usage and all of those things. So I understand where Kobe is coming from, and so did LeBron, to be absolutely clear. Magic was looking at this from a standpoint of organizationally, he wanted to not be Cleveland when LeBron left, where Cleveland is right now. LeBron isn't going to be a Laker forever, so Magic wanted the culture to be sustainable beyond LeBron, which I think is fine. I think that's a good way to look at things. And Magic, or LeBron, in responding to it, agreed with a lot of it. I'll just really quickly read the full quote. It's a long one, but I think it's important to read it all to understand where he was coming from in regards to all the aspects of this conversation. So, quote, "I don't know what asking me to do too much is, to be honest. I just play my game. I understand the logic behind it. I understand what Magic and Kobe are saying, because we want to continue to grow the young guys. We want to see how much our young guys can grow and be the best they can be. Magic and Kobe know who I am. I know who I am. They know what they're going to get out of me. You know what you're going to get out of me every game. Am I going to play well every game? Am I going to shoot the ball well every night? No, but you know who I am, and when it's really, really, really money time, three reallys, which is important here. You know who was going to be there. So we got guys who are going to continue to develop and get better through experience. People are going to try to blow it out of proportion, like, why did you have LeBron if you don't want to use the young guys as much? Guys don't understand the logic behind it, but it doesn't matter. Like, you guys asked me the other day, do you feel better after playing 30 minutes compared to how you feel after playing 40 minutes? It's like, no, I work myself all year round to get in tip-top shape all year round. I don't stop, so I can do whatever. I mean, I played in Game 7 of the Finals and damn near every minute of it. Last year, I played every single game. So you can slice it how you want it, but I understand what Magic and Kobe are saying, and we have to continue to develop these young guys, because if we don't, then long-term, what does that do for our franchise? I think that was pretty much the perfect answer. I think that was pretty much the best way to address all the aspects of the conversation.
Yeah, I do too. And I also think the lingering reality is that they would have pursued Kawhi harder or Jimmy Butler harder if they really we're looking for that number two guy right now. Now there's another guy who's been in rumors that they would pursue, right? Mm-hmm. Or I believe they would in Anthony Davis if they had an opportunity mm-hmm. to trade for him. I think that they would do it. But right, yeah, like that's it's funny. I've been seeing that as like people like, what do you think of this story? I'm like, is this news? Like,
yeah,
of course they're trying to trade for Anthony Davis.
The most talented young big since Tim Duncan might be available. No, the Lakers really like Brandon Ingram.
Right, and the guy who like. Just changed agencies to Clutch Sports. Yeah. Of all people, like, yeah, like I could act like an insider on this, like sources. The Lakers really want Anthony Davis on their team. Like, no shit. Pardon me. But but in the context of this current team, like this is what they signed up for, right? Like none of the young guys are ready to be that now. That's mm-hmm. asking a lot to be that right now at this age, to be that second guy. I think that the young guys, we view responsibility and is a guy doing too much again through that offensive lens. I think the young guys, as we've said in the previous segments, have done a wonderful job of absorbing the responsibilities they can absorb, which is on the defensive yep. end. If you want another guy on the team who you can give the ball to at the end of games and can be a real shot creator for himself and for others, you would have been crazy to look at this roster at the beginning of the year of what they are now and think that you had that. So this is what y'all signed up for. The kids are doing what they can. This is all a part of all of us have to be patient, whether it's an AD trade pursuing Kevin Durant over the summer or something else along those lines. We are not at that point in the process yet. And I think that they are doing what they can in terms of the other players on the team.
I also think it was really telling that he kind of fought back on the idea of it sounded to me he was talking a little bit of the late game situations, that it's easy and it would make sense if the Lakers only cared about wins this year. Just give LeBron the ball and let him go to work, right? Especially down the stretches of these games. I thought it was telling of a couple things here, and this might shock people, but every so often I put on some rose-colored glasses as well. But I took that as one further signifying that he is in on the Lakers being successful as an organization, not just them being successful while he's in town, but I also want to make sure that Magic is well set up after I'm done.
Yeah, he's been talking about our franchise. He referred to it as that, which I thought was notable.
And I started crying.
Yeah, and he's like, bro, he's unbelievable that he's performed. We take it for granted. We just think of LeBron as the stagnant thing that's always great. But like he's the last time I looked, and he may have moved into eighth place now. If you combine regular season minutes and postseason minutes, he was ninth place all time in minutes played.
Yeah. Wild.
Now think of what like, and we're talking guys like Kevin Willis, AC Green, Derek Fisher, Kobe, I believe is up there as well. I think he's fifth or sixth. Think about what they were doing when they were playing those tail end minutes, right? Like he's not done, but when they were playing that, 55,000th minute in the NBA between the regular season and the NBA or and the playoffs, they were, Tim Duncan was like a, bit piece of mm-hmm. of a okay team, right? But he was a role player by the end, like the mm-hmm. last few years of his career. Those other guys were role players all along. LeBron James is still the best player in the game, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And to be doing that at this point is unbelievable. So we don't know when he's going to get to that part of when he moves on, right? And he's not what he used to be. It hasn't happened yet. But the fact that he's talking in those terms, and really it lines up, Anthony, with the fact that he signed here in the first place.
For as long as he signed here,
too. For as long as he signed, because he did not sign up for a ready-made championship team.
Yeah.
He had faith and belief in the organization, and it's good to see him embracing that concept of our franchise as opposed to this franchise.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, we'll see if he is willing and able to have that same approach if, like, Kyle Kuzma is in Space Jam 2. And what kind of supporting role he'll allow Kyle Kuzma to carry in that. I'm kidding, everybody. But I wanted to bring this up because I think it's telling not only of LeBron's investment in his time with the Lakers, but as the Lakers as an entity being working within a partnership with Magic Johnson, and also accepting the challenge of like, no, the Lakers signed me. They signed me with expectations, and they know what they were getting themselves into and what they were hoping to get. And if need be, then I'll offer that up a little bit in the short term to be able to help out a little bit and put these guys better situated in the long term. So I thought it was great to hear all around. This is two straight, pretty positive shows.
You know, they've got a road trip coming up, and they're playing a few better teams. We'll get you back to your comfort zone soon, Anthony.
This limb that I'm standing on, I'm not comfortable. That'll do it, though, for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Again, I'm going to remind you guys every single show here, circle the date, December 13th. We will be there. The game is an earlier one. It's a 5:30 game. So I have to brave the rush hour traffic to get out there for it. But Pete and I and other people that are associated with the show are going to be at Tom's Urban. It's right across the street from Staples Center. I'm looking forward to seeing all of you guys there. Thanks for tuning in today and tuning in every day the way that you have. And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.